Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 4th. And we'll talk about the future of U.S. troops in Iraq this hour as the debate will heat up again today on Capitol Hill as the Senate Foreign Relations Committee holds a hearing on a report from the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, that paints a bleak picture of progress in Iraq and the prospects for Iraqi political reconciliation. And Congress this week will also hear another report about security issues in Iraq. This report from some military officers actually recommends that the Iraqi police force should be disbanded and start all over again. We will also get reaction and talk about President Bush's surprise trip to Iraq yesterday, where he hinted that U.S. troops could be reduced in Iraq if security improves like it has in Anbar province. He told lawmakers to wait until the top commander in Iraq, General Petraeus, gives his progress report next week before drawing any conclusions. We'll talk about these latest developments and welcome your questions and views for our guest at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We're happy to have with us John Peavyhouse, Associate Professor of Political Science at the Harris School for Public Policy at the University of Chicago. He is co-author of the newly released While Dangers Gather, Presidents, Congress, and the Use of Force, published by Princeton University Press. And Professor Peavyhouse joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. I'm happy that you're still with us on Wisconsin Public Radio, but sorry you're not right here in the studio as you usually are.
Thanks.
Yeah, and good luck with your new position at the University of Chicago.
Thanks so much. It was very, very hard to leave Madison, but it's great to still be back on WPR.
Yeah, so what did you make of President Bush's surprise visit to Iraq yesterday? Why did he do that?
I think the main reason the president did that was essentially to preempt what you were just discussing, these congressional hearings that are going to take place. I think by having a surprise visit, this completely captured media attention and allows him to really be the first mover in this media game of, you know, is the search working? Is it not working? Should we stay the course? Should we change the course? And so by him going there, that makes a very forceful statement, creates a big, obviously, media effect and potential public opinion effect of, let's stay there, let's stay the course, give the surge a little bit longer.
Yeah. Do you think it had that public opinion effect?
I do. Well, I don't know if it'll have the public opinion effect. I think Congress is going to follow up on the heels of this very quickly, obviously, with their own hearings. I don't think it hurt at all, but I do think the thing it was effective at doing was, I think, preempting some of the more critical reports coming out. And, you know, as you mentioned, he also sort of snuck in there this possibility of, well, we could draw the troops down if success keeps going.
Yeah. So security is much better in this Anbar province?
Security does seem to be getting a little better in Anbar. You know, this will be the main source of contention, I think, over the next couple of weeks in these congressional hearings. As you mentioned, there's the GAO report. There's the internal military report. Recently, the National Intelligence Estimate was released, and so, or is still actually sort of being tweaked, is my understanding. It's going to be, what's the metric, right? How do we measure this? If it's measured by attacks on American military, there are a fair number of indications that the surge is working. If it's measured by attacks on Iraqi civilians, it's not so clear. In Anbar, they've held steady. If in some portions of the Anbar province declined a bit, other portions they're up. This is going to be a really pitched debate over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I thought I was hearing that in Anbar, it's the Sunnis who are turning against al-Qaeda, and it turns out it's the Sunni insurgency that are the police force?
Exactly, and this has also been quite controversial in that, my reading and my understanding from the people I've talked to, they're suggesting that the analogy they're making here is a little like Afghanistan. I mean, it's different in that it's not quite so lawless, I guess would be the right word. It never was quite so lawless as in portions of Western Afghanistan where they were contracted with these military warlords. But it's a similar approach. It's you find sort of these power brokers, whether they're Sunni, but in Anbar, mostly Sunni, you convince them to try to establish some type of local control. You give them the power to do that, and they sort of become their own mini-governments mechanisms, mini-government, really. And that's been somewhat successful in parts of this. Now, some of these individuals had formerly been insurgents themselves. Some of these folks had admitted to attacking American troops in the past. And so that's where the controversy springs up. It's sort of like, who are you turning to govern? What types of strategies are they going to use? Are they, at the end of the day, and this is the real hard question, are they at the end of the day going to pledge their loyalty to a central Iraqi government? Are they going to hold control over their little, you know, part of the world and, you know, forget the national government? We've got our own rules here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the short term, this turning over to local Sunnis in some areas has worked. It has created some stability. I think it's created sort of bigger questions that are going to have to be answered, you know, 6 months, a year from now.
We're talking with John Peavyhouse, formerly of UW-Madison, now an associate professor of political science at the University of Chicago, also co-author of a new book, While Dangers Gather, Presidents, Congress, and the Use of Force. Professor Peavyhouse talking with us about Congress scheduling hearings this week on two key reports that assess the political and military conditions in Iraq, and also talking about President Bush's surprise visit to Iraq yesterday, and what this debate will mean for U.S. involvement in Iraq. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 18 minutes past 7 o'clock now on this Tuesday, September the 4th. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, we will talk with a guest from the Media Research Center, a conservative media watchdog group. And he'll say that the morning TV shows, news shows, are giving more attention and more favorable attention to the Democratic presidential candidates. So we'll talk about media coverage of the presidential race from the Media Research Center's point of view tomorrow at this time. Right now we're talking with John Peavyhouse. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of Chicago, talking about the latest developments involving Iraq. Two key reports will be heard before Congress this week that assess military and political progress in Iraq. And we're also talking about President Bush's surprise visit to Iraq yesterday, where he says that it's possible that troops could be reduced if security across Iraq continues to improve. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. John in Madison joins us first. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, you know, this is more of the Bush circus, smoke and mirrors. Bush is committed. Yeah, he's not looking for an objective evaluation. He's looking for confirmation of his policy because he's committed. He didn't listen to the public in the last election. He didn't listen to his own wise men. He's going to keep us in Iraq forever. There was a great op-ed, by Paul Krugman in the New York Times yesterday, pointing out the similarities between Colin Powell and General Petraeus. Petraeus is a partisan. Before the 2004 election, a Washington Post editorial, he stated there was tangible progress in Iraq, and the momentum was building. He was wrong on both counts. He's going to be wrong this time. The GAO report says only 3 of those 18 benchmarks have been met. The purpose of the surge was not military control. It was to enable the government to have enough breathing space so they could reconcile all their differences. They haven't reconciled the major 3 differences, which are oil sharing, debathification of the government, which has not been allowed, and getting the militias out of the police and also the regular army. They are not committed to any of those 3, and it looks like those critical 3 are never going to be achieved. Bush is not going to get out of this until he's out of office, and it's up to the Democrats to increase their lead in the Senate and take the presidency, because that's the only way we're going to get out of this country.
Yeah, John, thanks very much. Gave us a lot to talk about. Professor Peavyhouse, what about those, what do you want to react to that John had to say?
Sure. No, I mean, as you say, there's a lot there. The, you know, I do think this. I think one thing John said about sort of the breathing space argument, I think there is something to that. I mean, that was the initial push, was to say, let's try to bring some security to Iraq with this increased presence. Let's try to cut down the sectarian violence a bit and give the government time to sort of get on its feet. And I think that's one of the big picture issues that Congress is really going to push hard on here is, okay, let's buy, and again, I don't think this is going to be uncontroversial, but let's say, let's buy the violence is down. I don't think it's down at all against civilians. I think it is down in most regions against American military people. So what have we accomplished? And what we were supposed to accomplish was, again, breathing space to get the government set up and the government operating, and that's what be pushed on. They haven't met a lot of these benchmarks. This is why you've increasingly seen Bush somewhat critical of Maliki and saying, well, you know, we support him, but, you know, we're only giving him so much rope. I mean, I do think John is right in the following sense. I don't think you're going to see major changes in Bush administration policy unless they're absolutely forced. I don't think you're going to see Bush cut Maliki loose while he's in office. I think he's going to leave that for the next president to deal with, whether, you know, we want to push Iraq to change leadership, whether we want to get out wholesale. You know, I think the big changes in policy are really going to come with the next administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat. And, you know, I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah, well, isn't the president also trying to keep Republican Congress members on his side?
Oh, absolutely. And, in fact, you know, this is, you had mentioned the book. This is sort of the big point of our book, is that if you look historically, I mean, this is certainly true of Iraq. It's true for the last 50 years. I mean, partisanship matters. Republican presidents try hard to keep Republicans in the fold. Democratic presidents try hard to keep Democratic Congress people in the fold. And that's, you know, that's the key point. If you've got a majority in Congress, things are going to go smoothly. People aren't going to ask too many hard questions. If you're facing opposition in Congress, you're going to get hard questions. And, you know, you've seen a lot of people lately, especially, frankly, in the White House saying, well, you know, they're just playing politics. You know, the Democrats are just playing politics over war, and it's too important to do. But this is an old, you know, some you can disagree with that, but this is a long tradition in American foreign policy. Politics has really never stopped at the water's edge.
Yeah. What about the Petraeus report next week?
Right.
What's that likely to say?
I think the Petraeus report is going to try to put the best face on the surge. I think John is right about that. And here, that's why I said earlier, this is where the main debate's going to come in. You know, by all the anecdotal evidence that I've read, again, attacks on U.S. troops are declining, and sort of we can talk about theories as to why that's true. But attacks on civilians, you know, certainly have not. I think August was the second deadliest month for Iraqi civilians since the war began, and so you're still seeing sort of very large-scale attacks on civilian populations. And so what Petraeus is going to try to do is spin that as, look, it's working, these new strategies have worked, and we just need time, and these strategies can grow and make Iraqi as a whole much safer. And I think you're going to see a lot of skepticism from Democrats, both on, you know, his statement of things are better, but you're also going to see skepticism from congressional Democrats and some Republicans on this can, you know, this can be scaled up. Because as we talked about, you know, in Anbar, for example, these are sort of very small-scale projects that are many of them seem to be working. But the question is, can you replicate these over this very large country with a, you know, pretty diverse population? And I think there's going to be some skepticism about that.
Yeah. I'm wondering what effect you think Senator Warner's, you know, turnaround, what that will make, where he said that the president should use next week to say we're withdrawing, you know, maybe up to 5,000 troops just as a sending a message to the Iraqi government that we're not going to, you know, our commitment isn't open-ended.
Right. You know, I think that could be one way to read Bush's statement yesterday was as a hint towards that strategy. You know, even though he said, you know, we only want to withdraw from a position of success and power, it was also clear that by him even mentioning the possibility of a troop withdrawal, that was a signal to the Iraqi government. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, his statements, I believe about a week ago, that, you know, we still support Maliki, but, you know, we can't let this go on forever. We need to see some change within the government. Again, that was a signal that this isn't going to be wholesale support and that the Americans are going to pressure the Iraqi government. And that's the hard part.
Yeah. You know, also in the news yesterday, British troops were withdrawn from southern Iraq yesterday.
That's right.
And I guess that wasn't a huge surprise, but
The reports I saw said that, that the security there is atrocious.
It is. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be fodder for some of the skepticism over what's going on in Anbar. The British tried a similar strategy in Bosnia in terms of sort of buying off local leaders, trying to establish sort of these very small areas of neighborhood control. Now the only British troops remaining are around the Bosnia airport, I believe, and there's about 5,000 of them that are sort of there for emergency calls. That's going to be part of the debate. Is the British left, did they really leave it more secure? And frankly, over the next two or three weeks, it's going to be pretty critical because I think an American withdrawal scale down, whatever you want to call it, would follow a potentially similar model. And so if the British are out and things really start blowing up again in Basra, then, that's going to be a big signal that, pulling the American troops out of other regions where we've tried these strategies with the surge, it could be very tenuous to leave. Now, again, the hard question is, does that suggest, well, we should stay because if we leave, you're going to get an exceedingly even bloodier civil war than you have now? Or does that suggest, we should leave and things will be fine, we should just leave Iraq to themselves because it's also tenuous anyway?
Yeah.
And you'll see people making both of those arguments.
Now, we heard in NPR News that one of the two reports that Congress will hold hearings on this week is this one that says the Iraqi police force should just be disbanded and we should start all over again. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'm not quite as familiar with that particular report, but I think this goes to a problem that's been recurring throughout the time Americans have been in Iraq, which is that numerous times, some of the Iraqi police regiments, they've been very unreliable. There have been numerous instances of weapons being diverted from the Iraqi police to the insurgency. And, if you talk to, this is all anecdotal, but, a lot of these Sunnis, for example, that are signing up for the Iraqi military, not necessarily for the police, or they're volunteering with special units trained by the American military, what they're saying is, look, some of these Iraqi police units and the Iraqi government are heavily influenced by Iran. And this is the Sunni argument. And so a lot of the Sunnis that are volunteering, that are signing up for service in Iraq now, are saying, we don't like the Americans. We used to attack the Americans, but now we're more afraid of the Iranians coming in. And there's a belief among some, both in the American military and amongst the Sunnis, that Iran has some control over parts of the Iraqi police force. And that, I'm guessing, without being completely familiar with the report, that's going to be some of the analysis behind, that's going to be the justification behind that suggestion.
Yeah. We're talking about the debate over U.S. involvement in Iraq and whether or not the surge is working. We'll be heating up again today on Capitol Hill as the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hears independent assessment of progress in Iraq from the Government Accountability Office. The GAO's draft report says Iraq has made very little political progress in recent months. And plus, we're talking about President Bush's surprise trip to Iraq yesterday and what he had to say. And we welcome your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Tuesday, September the 4th. We are talking this hour about whether or not the surge in Iraq is working, talking about two reports that Congress will hear about this week about progress in Iraq, talking about President Bush's unannounced visit to Iraq yesterday, and his statement that some U.S. troops might be withdrawn if security gains made in the Anbar province could be spread to other areas of Iraq. And we welcome your questions and comments for our guest at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. President Bush offered no timetable on a possible withdrawal and did not suggest how many troops might be involved. And he insisted that decisions should be driven by, quote, the military and not a nervous reaction by Washington politicians or poll results. The six-hour visit gave President Bush, who was joined by Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, an opportunity to argue that conditions in Iraq were improving. And this came just before Congress is to receive these long-awaited reports, and especially General Petraeus's report next week, and debate whether to push for a withdrawal timetable. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. We heard from just one caller so far this hour who sounded a little depressed that it doesn't matter, that President Bush will keep troops in Iraq through his term, and maybe it's not even worth this debate. Professor Peavyhouse, you agree that President Bush isn't going to budge on this, and for the most part, U.S. Military troops will stay in Iraq, certainly through the rest of President Bush's term?
Yeah, I do think that's the case. I mean, obviously, Congress has the power of the purse. There are mechanisms they could use to try to force the president to bring them home. But at the end of the day, you know, I think there'll be a lot of discussion about timetables, about will Congress force them to do this. As the one caller did mention, you know, in the Senate, the Democrats just don't quite have enough votes to do that. And so I don't think in the end they're going to push to do that unless you'd see a number of Republicans defect from you know, the president's position. And while that's possible, I think it's unlikely, because I think in the end, what a lot of Republicans are going to say in the Senate is, look, you know, the Bush term is almost over. They might cap the surge. They might say, don't send any more, or, you know, do a small drawdown, but they're not going to do any kind of wholesale withdrawal. The argument's going to be, let the next administration deal with this. Which, you know, some people will say is a cop-out. Others will say, no, it's prudent. You know, we have to give it more time. But no, I don't see the president changing course unless you see, you know, just a random sort of act that would happen in Iraq. You know, Maliki is assassinated. You know, unless you see something major happen, I think the course is going to stay the same, unless Congress really gets in there and tries to cut the purse strings.
Yeah. The talk some about this oil sharing controversy that John, our caller in the first half hour, brought up, that this is one of the areas where progress is not being made. What's that all about?
Well, obviously, you know, from the beginning, everyone everyone knew that because of the vast amount of oil in Iraq, that this would be sort of the prize. And because the oil is distributed around different regions, it's not like it's in just one geographic place that one group controls. You always have the question about, you know, who's going to control the revenue from this, because this is obviously an enormous revenue stream. Will this go into the coffers of regional governments? Will it go into the coffers of the central government? How will it be shared? Iraq has the third largest oil reserves in the world. And so that's, again, that's a tremendous resource for that country in the future. But the question is, who gets to make the profit? And that's been, you know, how you allocate those between the 18 provinces has been very controversial. And I think it was February or late February or early March, it appeared like there had been an initial agreement on, you know, dividing up the spoils from this and sort of a breakthrough, and they'd come up with a formula to do this. Since then, my understanding is that's been put asunder, that several of the groups have withdrawn from that or claimed that it needs to be renegotiated. Probably that draft agreement to divide the oil revenues will be the starting point for any future negotiations, but it's still, again, that's why it's so controversial. I mean, this is the big resource in Iraq, and who will get it, you know, will depend on their relative power at the time when this agreement's drawn up. And it will also, but the fear of the individuals negotiating this is, because it's such a vast amount of money in the future, this will cement the power relationship. So if one group, if it's the Shiites that end up with the majority of the oil revenue, then they will, for the foreseeable future, stay the dominant group because they'll have the main income stream. They can augment their own military forces, et cetera. And so that's what the controversy is about.
Yeah. Lou in West Union, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, and listen to your program and enjoy your program. Very thoughtful. I was wanted to comment about President Bush's visit to Iraq. I suspect that perhaps he's in Iraq to talk to Petraeus, the same way he talked to Colin Powell before Colin Powell addressed the United Nations. If you recall, Colin Powell was skeptical about going into Iraq in the first place and came out, reversed everything. I suspect that Petraeus is being told what he can say, what he can't say. He's going to talk about military success. Military success isn't going to get us there in Iraq. I don't know what will get us there in Iraq. It was a mistake, and that's about all I can say.
Yeah. Do you think President Bush was there to tell Petraeus what to say, Professor Peavyhouse?
Well, I mean, I do think he was certainly, they were trying to get on the same page. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt about that. How much of this was sort of arm-twisting. You know, Petraeus, as the first caller mentioned, you know, Petraeus, in many people's eyes, has been overly optimistic about what's going on, and for quite some time, not since even prior to him being head of operations. And so, you know, I think the, you know, those who are skeptical of what's going on in Iraq and of the reports coming out, they're going to see this as, yes, they're just, you know, they're getting on the same page. I doubt, you know, Petraeus and Bush, I would guess, communicate quite frequently. And so I doubt there was any sort of new information shared between them. Bush was probably getting the most recent update that he could from Petraeus, just so he could be on the same page with the general. But again, I think the biggest reason for the visit, as I said earlier, was this sort of shifts, you know, again, and he keeps saying, Bush keeps saying, you know, well, look, it's working. If things keep working, we can draw down. If he can sort of set the media or set up, you know, expectations such that the status quo is that things are going okay, then all of a sudden it looks like Congress is coming in and just meddling where they shouldn't be meddling. I don't, given the nature of state of public opinion right now, given the skepticism with which most people are treating these reports coming out just of the White House on the surge success, I don't know how successful that's going to be, but I do think he did at least sort of shift attention away from the congressional hearings a little bit in the short term.
Yeah. Bernie in Whitewater, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I think one other element going on with that oil sharing is the pressure being put on the Iraqi parliament to send 80% of their oil wealth to multinational corporations, and they are resisting that. They're not happy about that. So it isn't just sectarian squibbling over who should get what. And I think if you look at this thing from the point of view of the PNAC sort of people that planned this whole operation, it's a tremendous success. They've got control of Iraq's oil. They've got military bases built, a U.S. occupation force in the Middle East right in Iraq, and there's a lot of money being made off the military contract. I think it's so preposterous when we kind of lose the big picture and start arguing about, well, how well are we doing in occupying this country that never attacked us, never did anything to us, and why do we continue to put up with politicians who parrot the same old lies about 9/11, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, et cetera, et cetera. At some point, shouldn't we kind of follow what the late Marine Corps General Smedley Butler recommended, which is use our military in our territorial waters for our actual defense? It just seems like all these military ventures, which are costing us trillions of dollars when you add them up, are based on lies and pretext, and we lack all moral authority to be there. Why do we assume that we have a right to be there, and why do we say we're bringing democracy when obviously that's not even on the list?
Yeah. Well, I'll get Professor Peavyhouse to react to your comments after this weather break, Bernie. And then we have an open line for you, too. If you have a question about some of the latest developments regarding Iraq, President Bush's visit there, unannounced visit there yesterday, the two reports that Congress will be holding hearings on this week, General Petraeus's long-awaited report coming next week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, September the 4th. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll talk about our quest to be clean with the author of A History of Personal Hygiene, author of Clean, coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking about Iraq this hour with our guest, John Peavyhouse, formerly of UW-Madison, now with the University of Chicago. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. The House has scheduled hearings for this week on two key reports that assess the political and military conditions in Iraq. They aren't very favorable. The GAO report says only 15 of 18, we are failing in 15 of 18 benchmarks. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We just heard from Bernie just before the weather break, who, I will paraphrase him, says that we now have control of Iraq's oil and we now have permanent bases there, and that's what was intended in the first place, Professor Peavyhouse. This had nothing to do with WMDs or terrorism or 9/11. So Bernie says the administration thinks this is a tremendous success, the invasion of Iraq. What do you say?
Well, I think that, well, let's take it issue by issue. I mean, on the oil issue, you know, it really is a matter of them dividing up the spoils between each other. And there is this issue of how highly will it be regulated, what role will multinationals have in coming in and able to run the oil fields or to take profits or just manage the oil production. That is controversial also, and it's something that's being discussed. But in my opinion, the far bigger issue is the division among the ethnic groups and among the provinces, because not all provinces are equally endowed with oil. And so the question is, how much sharing will there be? Because that's going to be a huge future basis of power. Once that gets solved, sure, then we can talk about the controversy over multinationals. But, I personally, I've been on the show before saying this, I've never thought that, I mean, oil is a reason we pay attention to the region. Oil is a reason why we always watch the region. It's clearly very, obviously, an important resource. I have never really thought this was a war about oil. The base argument, I think there's something to that. I think, we do have more permanent base structure and a forward command structure in the region. But frankly, we had a lot of that before. I mean, we had that in the Persian Gulf, which is the strategic, important point in that region. So I'm not saying that I think, we really did go into Iraq to, to spread liberal democracy. But I do think if you think the only reason we went in was sort of oil and forward bases, I mean, there were much simpler ways to do that. There are much easier ways to do that and not lose your control of Congress, your party's control of Congress, et cetera. And so, but I will say I do exactly share Bernie's frustration with, in particular, the administration sort of playing what oftentimes seems an overly optimistic hand about, mm-hmm. look, we are making progress, things are going well. And I think that's where these congressional hearings that you've discussed, Joy, are really going to come in, and where the PR battle is going to reach a fevered pitch. It's like, how successful are we? And the big picture, which Bernie reminded us of, is what is the future? What does this look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Do we still have hundreds of thousands of American troops there? Do we have tens of thousands? Do we have zero American troops there? What is the long-term strategy for this look like? Again, let's assume the surge is working. So what? Right? What's happening? And that's where the GAO report is especially damning, because, many of these are political goals that are not being reached. And as one of the early callers mentioned, the whole point of the surge was, let's create some political breathing space. And the fear of a lot of people, including myself, is that some of the deals that have been cut with these local commanders, former insurgents, have actually only made that long-term goal of political stability even more difficult, because you've essentially armed groups whose incentive are to take care of themselves and no one else. And so you've created these little islands of power all over the country, and getting them to reconsolidate power, getting them to pledge some type of loyalty to a central government which they distrust, becomes all the more difficult.
Yeah. Thanks to Bernie. Joe in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi there. I just wanted to say, I don't think it makes any sense to, as a voter, to try to force this administration to leave, because they won't. I mean, there isn't any possible way. They never went in there to win this war or to achieve the things that they said that they were going to achieve in the first place. They went in to push Saddam out of the way, because they looked at him as a potential liability who might fall over eventually in a direction that doesn't favor us. I think they decided they wanted to go in and push him over themselves, and I think they're perfectly happy with the idea that the country will do exactly what they said it would do in the first Gulf War if they took them out, which is break into several parts. I think, you know, so trying to force these guys to draw down is ridiculous. But I think what we need to do is keep them from starting a war with Iran. I think the public can do that. And I think more importantly, I think the public can prevent the next administration from starting a war with Iran and keeping troops there. You know, Hillary Clinton has made it very clear that she intends to keep a rather large force in Iraq, although drawn down from where we are, but still large. And I'm sure that that force will end up, after the country breaks up, in the northern areas, the Kurdish areas. And I would not be surprised if she tries to start a war with Iran, because they'll be interfering with the other regions and with our troops there, or at least that's the story we're going to be fed.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of that, Professor PVS?
Well, I do think that. So let me take two parts out of his comments. One is, I do agree, as I said before, I don't think this administration is going to leave. I also actually agree, you know, when people ask, you know, why are we in Iraq? I really do think there were individuals who believed there were WMDs there. I think that was sort of became a self-fulfilling prophecy within, you know, that's a whole other show, right, about the intelligence issue. I do think there was this larger vision, right, of that Joe said, you know, Saddam's weak, he could fall, this is leave a power vacuum, why don't we take advantage of this opportunity and create this sort of model democracy. And I really do think there were individuals in the White House who thought that they could do this, right? I mean, American power seemed like it was sort of at a high point. No other superpower. We just what looked like we'd done a decent job in Afghanistan. So et cetera, et cetera. I think the sort of larger vision issue is there's a lot to be said for that Joe talked about. The issue of Iran here, and I do agree with Joe on this. It's public, but it's also Congress. I mean, one argument that my co-author and I make in our book is that Congress is actually fairly successful historically at stopping military operations before they start. Once the troops are in the field heavily, you get all kinds of other arguments and difficulties in controlling the battle and controlling, you know, the resources going to them, and some people even believing that that's not Congress's job at all. But beforehand, right, before a conflict starts, that's when public opinion, and in particular as funneled through Congress, seems to be at its height. And so I do agree with Joe in saying that if we believe that there is a war with Iran in the future, that this is something that Congress or public opinion actually could be quite strong at influencing our future military possibilities. I'm a little more skeptical. I mean, I don't think in the near future, despite all the, you know, the sort saber rattling, that there's sort of this inevitable war coming against Iran. You know, it would make, frankly, it would make Iraq look like a cakewalk. I mean, you know, it certainly hasn't been that. And so I just think given the logistical difficulties, the troop shortages, low morale, you know, you name it, all these difficulties, despite the saber rattling, I think it's very unlikely.
Yeah. What do you think the chances are that a new Democratic president in 2008 is also going to be keeping a good number of troops in Iraq?
I think that's likely. I think even despite, and remember, you don't have to go too far back, I mean, to the last two administrations, both the Bush administration and the Clinton administration, to see people as candidates saying one thing and then getting in office and doing exactly the opposite. So even those candidates who are saying, look, if I get in, I'll withdraw or I'll significantly draw us down, it's one thing to say that as a candidate. It's another thing to be the president and do that, to be the commander-in-chief and actually do that. So I think you'd see varying levels of drawdown, but I don't think you'd see most of them anyway, most of the major ones who, if you believe the straw polls, you know, are sort of in the lead. I don't think you'll see them do drastic drawdowns in the short term.
Yeah, I see an article in the Washington Post last week that said that the president is going to ask for $50 billion more for the war in Iraq, presumably right after the Petraeus report. Is he going to get it?
He'll get some of it. I would be shocked if he got all of it. And he'll get, but you know, Congress will go in and they'll take a hard look at that. They'll give him some of it, but they're going to limit that pretty drastically, is my guess. And I think there'll also be a really hard debate over a timeline. I mean, do we want to say by X date we'll see X percent drawdown? You know, by X date we'll see, you know, a certain level of troops in Iraq in certain places. I think so those are going to be the two big issues are how much money do we give, if any, and do we set a timetable as a condition of that money?
Yeah. Well, Professor Peavyhouse, thanks very much for being with us, and enjoy the first day of classes, huh?
Yep, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot. John Peavyhouse, Associate Professor of Political Science at the Harris School for Public Policy at the University of Chicago, formerly with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's co-author of the newly released book, While Dangers Gather, Presidents, Congress, and the Use of Force, published by Princeton University Press. And we thank him for being with us. We thank Karen Prager for producing this hour. And we thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There is much more to come. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store. The number is 1-800-747-7444. 1-800-747-7444. Or you can listen to our talk shows archived on our website, wpr.org. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with a guest about media coverage of the presidential campaign so far. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.